What I have learned in the last 4 years is that I was pretty much wrong about almost everything that I believed. I will never feel defeated because someone brags about out earning in fiat compared to me.
Right.
Yeah, I had a higher return than your Bitcoin. The yield on Bitcoin is freedom.
Welcome to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I have Michael Jordan with me, the Chief Growth Officer for the Bitcoin Way. And I am so excited because I am now a partner with the Bitcoin Way. So you can actually use my link and find out in today's episode what the Bitcoin Way is, why it's important, and how it can help you. So thank you so much for joining me today, Michael.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to the chat.
Yeah. I mean, how many times this is probably something you get?
I know. Yeah. How many comments do I get on my name?
Yes. Okay. So I didn't even have to finish that question. So
all the time. And I was a kid in the 90s. I guess I'll tell you really quickly the backstory. It's my parents were not like huge Michael Jordan fans. I'm not from Chicago. My mom liked the name Michael. My dad's from Indiana, which is a big basketball state. And so my mom came to my dad and said, "Hey, I think Michael's a good name. Like, there's this up and coming, you know, star named Michael Jordan. And, you know, also, you know, I just love the name." So she says I would have been Michael Smith or Michael Jones or whatever, you know, our last name had been, that's what I'd be. Instead, I have probably one of the, you know, 5 or 10 most famous names on the planet. So the good thing is, regardless of how memorable I am, people tend to recall my name.
That's so funny. I love that you have the other Michael Jordan listed. So people just, they're already wondering, like, why is your name Michael Jordan?
Well, you want to know the worst part is my middle initial is B.
And oh, really?
So now there's an, you know, people know the actor Michael B. Jordan. I don't know. I've never seen him in a movie. I'm not much of a movie guy, but my understanding, he's also very famous. And so I'm like the other Michael Jordan, if I were being honest with myself.
So funny. I love that. That'd be awesome if it's like, you know, you're like putting your two names on there. Like, why are you using two famous people's names?
Yep.
So yeah, I want to know how you got started with not only just finding Bitcoin, but then what led you here. I want to know what your interests were prior to Bitcoin. Were you a curious person? Were you a technological person? You know, what was your background like before you got into Bitcoin?
I would say I'm semi-technical. I have a graduate degree in cybersecurity management, which probably sounds a lot more technical than it actually is. I never practiced I didn't practice long as a cybersecurity, you know, like an employee anywhere. I worked in sales for most of my career, cybersecurity, privacy, compliance. So I needed to know enough, and certainly my sort of formal education lent itself to that. But it wasn't something where I was, you know, I was never like a systems administrator, you know, network, you know, I didn't work in like, you know, networks or anything like that. But I had like a good foundational understanding, which I think lent itself to an appreciation for Bitcoin. Like, I'd taken courses on cryptography and that sort of thing. And again, like, I can't count with my fingers anymore, my math skills are, you know, pretty strained. But, you know, I sort of understand the basics, right? And so I think it helped as I went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. It did help having like a baseline of knowledge, I think. I ran a business with my brother for a little while, again, more cybersecurity compliance, and worked at an AI startup for a bit, sales. So I got a, you know, introduction to artificial intelligence as it was sort of becoming this preeminent technology. And then I found the Bitcoin Way as a client. They started hiring for a sales role very shortly after, or as I was going through the process of working with them to take proper self-custody of my Bitcoin. And I reached out to them. I said, "Hey, I'm working with you right now. I want to work in Bitcoin. I align with you philosophically, and the stars aligned, and now I'm here."
That's amazing. So you actually just reached out and asked, you were a client of theirs, and now you're the chief growth officer. So that experience you had in sales, you know, that's what they needed, what they were looking for. And if you didn't ask the question, if you didn't put it out there, you know what I mean? You just never know what could happen if you don't find out. And that just shows you that you're early in Bitcoin. These companies are starting up, they're newer, you know, they need, you know, people like yourself to fill certain roles. So I'm so excited that you reached out to them because you align with the company and you align with the values and what they provide to people. And One thing that I think is amazing too is that you have a newsletter that people could sign up to. And I think when you sign up to the newsletter, you could do the survey so people could check how secure their self-custody setup is, you know, with that survey. So that's a really great way for people to just check and see, you know, it's something you should know, like how secure is your setup? You know, do you need advice? Do you need help? And, you know, we do align with self-custody, and that is the way that you actually use Bitcoin. So making sure your setup is correct and you have people you can trust to help you, you know, get it done, help you make sure that you are confident, you know, storing your Bitcoin and being your own bank.
Yes. There's, you know, something we do like every month, I'll tie this back. We do webinars all the time. And what we've started to migrate to is Q&A webinars where we have Natalie Brunell or Larry Lepard join, you know, Tony from our team, and they just field questions for 60 minutes. And the reason I think it's been such a compelling value proposition for people is because they have questions about Bitcoin and they don't really know exactly who to reach out to. You know, you can DM someone and hopefully you get an answer, but a lot of times that ends up in, you know, the unread spam or, you know, whatever. And so what we try to do at the Bitcoin Way is create a resource whereby people can just go to our website. They're prompted to take a survey basically of, you know, describe your self-custody setup. And it feeds them answers about what are the gaps? What are you missing? Because I think a lot of people want to take self-custody and it's not exactly clear. There are a lot of tools, a lot of hardware wallets, a lot of applications they could choose from, and they're not all created equal. So what are the things that you need to be thinking about? And we, you know, we're very principled, I would say, in our approach. I mean, everything's got to be open source. The hardware wallets need to be air gapped, needs to be Bitcoin only. Software that you're utilizing, so there are no compromises made at any point in the development process. And if you sort of take that approach where you're defensive about the way that you approach Bitcoin self-custody, I think the principles that we stand for are not only incredibly reasonable but pretty obvious once you begin to understand that. If you're not a software developer, you might not recognize why open source matters so much. You might not understand if you're not a cybersecurity professional, why don't you want to plug your hardware wallet into a computer? And so we try to break it down for people, make it simple for them to gauge where do I stand, not relative to the rest of the world, because what everyone else is doing is completely irrelevant. Most people leave their coins on an exchange. Or what matters is, compared to the optimal way that I can secure my Bitcoin and retain all of the properties about Bitcoin that I appreciate, censorship resistance, permissionlessness, all of those things, how do I stack up? And we want to be a resource. And that's why we do the podcast, why we do the webinars, it's why we do a lot of things. But I think the survey, I agree with you, is a great place for a lot of people to start.
Yeah, I love the webinar idea too. And how do you guys get people to join the webinar? Like, how do you promote that to show people?
So we have a newsletter, and it's a growing newsletter. We have a guy on our team who spends a lot of time every week writing. He'll write about sort of topical things, sort of what's going on in the news, and great memes. Like it's a very fun read, but it goes into depth. And so we've been growing that. We obviously email all of those folks and let them know we've got webinars coming up. We have a growing presence on our YouTube channel, obviously, on X. And so it used to be sort of private webinars where just you had to be a newsletter subscriber. And it was a way of, you know, bringing people in and saying, hey, you know, subscribe to the newsletter, you get some sort of exclusive content. But we recognize the need for people who have never heard of the Bitcoin Way, but maybe, you know, they find us on their For You page on X, they're scrolling and they see, you know, us promoting a webinar. And they've got questions too, and they need to understand where we stand on self-custody and some of the things that we do, self-sovereignty. And so you can find us a lot of places, but yeah, I mean, I would just encourage people, if you don't think self-custody is for you today, I think we could convince you over time, go subscribe to our newsletter, go check us out on X, subscribe to our YouTube channel. You know, I was telling you offline, we have 6 segments that go out each week. So some of them are more news. We have like hot takes from Tony, our founder. We have our sort of traditional podcast, something kind of like this that goes out on Fridays. So there's probably something for just about everyone. I think the key is you've got to begin with an open mind, because we're not sitting around shilling treasury companies. We're not talking a lot about price action. We're not talking about some of the sort of hot, you know, those hot topics of the day. We're talking about the fundamentals and why Bitcoin matters and why you should hold it yourself, why you should opt out, and all of those things that I think come with sort of the, I would say, like the traditional Bitcoin ethos.
How secure is your Bitcoin? If you're not fully confident in your self-custody, take the quiz at thebitcoinway.com/BitcoinNova and learn how to truly own your Bitcoin and protect your privacy. And that's like the real signal of Bitcoin. You know, that's what I love. I love to just talk about how it changes people's lives, why you need it, why, you know, you should secure it yourself, all those things. Like when you think about, you know, the price, it's more short-term trader thinking. We're not into that. We're not doing the, I mean, our ethos is not the treasury company thing. I know people do that, you know, but, you know, I have my thoughts. I know you have some thoughts about that as well, but it's not important to us. It's not something that, you know, we want to just use for, you know, news, you know, like the top news today about everyone's talking about it. That's not what it's about, you know, just people's lives and how Bitcoin changes lives kind of, and why you should, you know, just take the time and actually check your custody solutions, because, you know, a lot of people kind of want to have their, you know, head in the sand or just not really think that, you know, they think that they're safe, you know, but you should, you know, try to open up and just think what are my risks, you know, because you don't want to think about, you think you're fine, you know, but you just should cover every, you know, every type of security you could have and just make sure that you have somebody that's on your side. You know, when you, people that got into Bitcoin earlier before the Bitcoin Way started, you know, you had to figure these out yourself. You had to figure out these solutions yourself. And you went through, a lot of people went through, you know, losses or they did something wrong or, you know, we've all had our learning lessons, but I think that was before companies like yours came out and people had to figure these things out on their own. But as time goes on, you have people on your side. You can turn and you can have support, you know? So it's amazing that people can just get into Bitcoin now and find the Bitcoin way and actually be able to be self-sovereign and confident about it.
Completely agree. And I suspect the time is running out that people will, it's a gradually then suddenly thing where at the moment you're still very early and you have an opportunity to own your own UTXOs, take self-custody. Like regardless of once you run a node, I imagine a future where our business will have to evolve because more and more people are sort of by necessity are operating on L2s. And I think that's fine. I think it would be incredible if everyone had the opportunity to, for the rest of the time, to own UTXOs, operate on the base layer. But the reality is it's not going to be possible with certainly with fees and fact that there are only 21 million Bitcoin and 8 billion people. I think we're going to have more and more of these solutions, which I'm excited about. We have those folks, you know, talking about Lightning and all of, you know, eCash on our podcast. It'll be interesting where the future takes us. But I think it's one of more and more Bitcoin saturation and where the people who do opt into self-custody and more self-sovereign lifestyle now, today, are going to benefit immensely. You're going to have options that the rest of the world just isn't afforded, even though I think Bitcoin will make the world better, or at least incentivize better behavior for everyone at some point in the future.
And for people who don't, I mean, I know that a lot of early Bitcoiners are people that are just finding out about Bitcoin or finding a channel that, you know, they just want to learn about it. When they hear, sometimes even when people say the word fiat, I like to just say the word money, because, you know, Bitcoin is money, but fiat is man-made money. So I like to just distinguish that for people, because a lot of people come across Bitcoin channels and they just hear fiat and they're like, I remember when I first got into Bitcoin, I didn't know what fiat was. I had to find out what that word meant. So people don't know that word. So when you think of the word UTXO, it's, can you explain to people what that means so that they can just know that, like, that's why it would get too expensive to transact, because
Yeah, a UTXO is effectively a chunk of Bitcoin that you store, and you know you have to find this balance between holding sufficiently large UTXOs so that way you can spend them readily. If you, the number of UTXOs that you use to spend increases, you know, is going to determine how much it costs you to spend. So if you have 20 tiny little UTXOs and you want to lump them together and buy something, it's going to cost you a lot more than if you have one larger UTXO, because the fees are based on the size of the transaction. And so more UTXOs mean a larger transaction size. But then the other issue is, you know, if you have owned 10 Bitcoin and you have it in one 10 Bitcoin UTXO, and you go buy groceries with your Bitcoin, well, it's a public ledger. And so whoever you purchase from can go look at the blockchain and see that he purchased this with a 10 Bitcoin UTXO. Now he knows that you've got 10 Bitcoin. And now that's, you know, close to $1 million worth of purchasing power. In the future, that's going to be $5, $10, $50 million worth of purchasing power. You want to have some level of privacy. So what that means, though, is that that's something that you can hold. You can custody yourself on the base layer of Bitcoin without any counterparty risk, without fear of censorship. You can send it day or night. I mean, we're recording on a US holiday today. The banks are closed. You can send your Bitcoin on that day. But to my point previously, because of the nature of Bitcoin, its scarcity, the fact that more people coming on trying to demand for block space, demand to send transactions on the base layer is going to increase. It's going to get more and more expensive over time. Right now, it's very inexpensive to send. That's going to change, though, and we're going to need some of those other solutions that enable people to send very quickly, have settlement. And I think most people are never going to own a UTXO. Most people are never going to know how to operate a hardware wallet. Most people are going to have some level of sort of separation from what we, the early adopters, know today when it comes to Bitcoin.
So a UTXO is on the main chain, on the Bitcoin base layer. It is different than Lightning then. So if you were to use a hot wallet for spending and having a certain amount of Bitcoin as a UTXO on the main chain, you would separate, you know, your savings account, let's say, to your, you know, your checking account. Like, I would say the hot wallet would be like your checking account. So you could, you know, portion off a section of spending money for your checking account and use a Lightning wallet, let's say, for everyday transactions that isn't linked directly back to your main chain, you know, your savings. You know, some people don't know.
Yeah. So I have my savings in cold storage and in self-custody that I control 100%. And then, yeah, I've got my phone here. And I've got a couple of wallets that I use, but I just put, you know, a little bit on there. If it disappeared tomorrow, it would be a bummer. It wouldn't be the end of the world, though. I can replenish those as needed from my cold storage. But I think this is something we're probably going to talk about, but I look for ways to use that, right? So I went to Steak and Shake with my family yesterday. So we bought our lunch with Bitcoin. I have a call this afternoon with a farmer who I recently have found and have been using in the area to talk to them about accepting Bitcoin. And so I'm looking for ways to actively and continuously drain my spending wallet, my hot wallet, you know, get them accepting Bitcoin over Lightning, and then I'll just replenish as needed. And it's a beautiful thing. So I'm a big believer in spend and replace. I mean, I think holding your Bitcoin is a use case. I've seen Saifedean actually talk about this, that at the end of the day, it's how you keep your cash balances, how companies, institutions, individuals retain their cash balances that determines what's going to be the future reserve currency. It's not who's, you know, buying a cup of coffee that we tally up at the end of the year and say, oh, Bitcoin won or the dollar won. And I completely agree with Saif on that. However, I think that spending your Bitcoin is important because it's a new way of exposing. First of all, we need people to begin spending Bitcoin for it to achieve the potential that I believe it has. But second, it, you know, with my farmer who I'm going to talk to this afternoon, it's a great opportunity to introduce them to this concept, to get them curious. Okay, now they have, you know, $100 or a couple $100, you know, over the next few months of Bitcoin. I'm probably not going to be able to convince them of everything that I've learned over the last 3 years, spending a couple of thousand hours of learning in a 20 or 30 minute call. But if I can set them on that path to be curious and to begin educating themselves, I can point them to some videos, to some podcasts, to some books. Well, they were curious enough to take the call. Maybe they'll be curious enough to go do some reading, to go do some research. And who knows, maybe, you know, 6 months from now, they're going to, you know, put on their stand at the farmer's market, Bitcoin preferred. And then they're going to say, well, hang on, why do you want Bitcoin? How do I get this? They say, oh, you know, we have this friend, Michael, go talk to him. He can help you get set up, show you how to buy it. And then now we've got like this little community who is, you know, potentially using Bitcoin 12 months, 2 years from now, who knows what it'll look like. So
yeah, I mean, there's Like you said, you're actively looking for places to spend your Bitcoin. So for companies, you know, small or big, you know, anybody who, you know, actually opens up their company or their sales to Bitcoin, and you would be reaching another market of people who are looking for places to just be able to support the network. And it's not just because you're trying to support Bitcoin. It's also literally digital cash. It's peer-to-peer. So it's your, I love using it and spending and replacing, because, you know, you're going to spend the fiat anyway. So buy the Bitcoin and spend it. But, you know, you're starving a system that steals from you when you don't use a traditional system. So you're going to use your debit card, your credit card, you know, you're paying fees to a middleman for what? You know, I think as long as you can get away from doing that, we don't need a middleman for settlement with Bitcoin. We could just, it's just like spending cash, but digitally. The company saves money. You know, they're not paying these fees, you know, with accepting credit cards. You know, all the time I have a small business, and I see a lot of times going out to restaurants now too, where because of how expensive everything's gotten, you know, they charge extra because of the credit card fees, you know, when you go places. So it's like with Bitcoin, it's like spending cash. So you don't have to have an extra fee for spending Bitcoin. It's just a better way to use money. I just think that, you know, it's just amazing. I think I wish more people would find out about it, because I think that people have this fear about digital cash and they think it's so controlled, but that's what the CBDCs, the central bank digital currencies are. That's what would be, you know, the centralized control, and the, you know, like Bitcoin is the freedom money. So it's just, there's such a difference. And, you know, it's just a really, I think businesses should accept Bitcoin and also have more customers, you know, because of it.
I agree. And you look at like Peter McCormick, you know, he bought a little, you know, soccer club in England, and no one cared about that club until he said, hey, we're going to be the Bitcoin club. We're going to have a Bitcoin treasury. We're going to, you know, accept payment for tickets, for merchandise in Bitcoin. And like Bitcoiners just rallied around him, you know. And now, to be fair, he had a massive Bitcoiner audience. And my local farmer, like, I'm going to be the only guy paying him in Bitcoin for the foreseeable future. However, the tide's going to turn eventually. And even just having a few hundred dollars, $1,000 worth of Bitcoin is your like, that's going to be meaningful here in the not so distant future. And, you know, there's going to be another couple of Bitcoiners in the area who crop up, and I'm going to meet and introduce them to him, or are going to show up at the farmer's market, or, you know, otherwise find him and say, this is the guy who I'm going to get everything from. Like I hardly need to go to the grocery store, find any mainstream, you know, sort of traditional retailers to provide things for me. I can get my, you know, my milk, my beef, my eggs, my raw honey, my, you know, you name it. And it's all from a guy who lives, you know, 45 minutes from here. Like, that's who I want to support. I think there's a really strong and compelling moral case to be made about trying to pay people in Bitcoin where you can, because, you know, okay, I don't value the big chains, you know, I'm fine paying them in fiat if I need to, you know, buy something from them. And I'm not going to convince them to accept Bitcoin on my own accord anyway. But someone who's providing me high quality, local, grass-fed, grass-finished beef, I want to pay him in something meaningful. And maybe he doesn't understand that yet, but I do. And it would be maybe selfish of me to keep paying him with, you know, continuously depreciating paper, if I know that I can give him something meaningful in return. And, you know, I think the macroeconomic case for Bitcoin, I mean, nothing stops this train. Obviously, I think, you know, you do a little bit of studying, you get there pretty quickly. But I think building on the moral case for why we need to be using it and why we need to be introducing other people to it is just as important. And it's the reason I'm having this call with him today. It's the reason I've met with a couple of churches now, my own and one that my friend started a few years ago. And I'm gifting them Bitcoin and just saying, just don't spend this for 5 years, please. Let's kick off a treasury. And, you know, I hope your conviction grows. I hope you'll read some books. You'll start accepting Bitcoin, you know, for the offering. And, you know, my hope is that the institutions whose values align with mine will be the first to adopt, because I'm sick and tired of big food, big pharma, education, all of it's been co-opted by, you know, special interests and politicians who have no interest in making my life any better or anyone else's. I want to opt out of those things, and I want to empower the people who I think are going to help usher in a bright orange future, not just because they've accepted Bitcoin, but because they also have the willingness to act. Human action, I think, is what makes the bright orange future, not necessarily Bitcoin, but coupled with a continuously appreciating form of money that no one can manipulate, control, censor. That's a powerful combination. And I think the world gets a lot better then.
It's amazing too. You're right. And I love that, because when you try to reach out to a local farmer or somebody that's a smaller business or somebody that you could actually speak to the owner and say, hey, or a church, you know, and tell them, you know, as a gift, you're giving them Bitcoin saying, don't spend it for 5 years. This is just my contribution to maybe, hopefully you'll understand it as you let it sit there. This is a gift to you, you know, and you're helping these people that are actually being hurt by the system that they currently support. And the people that are the ones making us sick with poisoned food, you know, like toxins in the food, you know, things that we don't know the long-term effects of, things that, you know, just like, you know, the pharmaceutical companies and everything that has incentives in this world that is too big and too corporate. Those are not the people you're going to reach out to a corporation tomorrow and say, you should do this. They're not going to just say yes. And they're the ones that are benefiting from the sick system as well. So while they're hurting you, they're benefiting, and you can't convince those people because they're part of this collective, like, you know, control manipulation force. So when you reach out to the smaller the people that are affected, the people that need Bitcoin, they're the ones that would actually be helped by it and be able to escape that cycle, you know, that endless cycle of you know, trying to just keep up with life and working hard and running on a hamster wheel, you know? So, and for churches, I think I love the use case for churches, because I think that churches, you know, thinking about fiat as, you know, when you think of the idea of church and you think that they're about, you know, two sides, there's deception and lies, and then there's truth and, you know, transparency. You know, you think that Bitcoin is the truth and transparency, and money, fiat, is the lies and the deception. So when you're accepting fiat in a church, you're just accepting a lie, and you're accepting like blood money and things that all fiat does in the world is just terrible. And, you know, Bitcoin is pure and incorruptible. And that's something that should align more with churches.
I completely agree. And that's part of the case. So when I met with my church a few months ago, it's a bit of a larger church. So it's more of, there's more, you know, not red tape, but just they need to get like their board, you know, aligned on this. With my, I have a friend who has a church of maybe 70 or 80 people. It's younger, smaller. And I went in and talked to, I guess, four of them. So my friend who's the pastor, and then he has like a, you know, like a finance team basically who kind of holds him accountable. And I spent an hour with him. And while I was doing it, one of the guys set up an account at river.com, because that's where I said, you know, look, there are ways you can do this better, you know, buy non-KYC, all of that. But I was like, you guys, you need to get started. You need to, you know, start accumulating Bitcoin. You need a place where I can send it to you. And then we're going to cross the self-custody bridge when we get there. This pastor friend of mine, I actually gifted him a service with the Bitcoin Way. So I paid for it for him personally. I said, you know, if he's one of the very few people in my life who has been curious enough to keep asking questions to say, hey, how do I do this? And I was like, listen, man, if you're curious enough to ask these questions, to start buying Bitcoin, to sort of take the unconventional path, I will pay for you to become a client of the Bitcoin Way. You buy your hardware wallet, you know, you buy your Node hardware and all that, but I want to make sure you get set up the right way. So we'll get the church to that point as well. But it's a journey. I mean, first you need to internalize some of this stuff. Like, why do we want Bitcoin? Why are we accepting it? What's the value? What does the future look like? What's money going to, how is it going to be used? It's rare that someone just wakes up and one day studies Bitcoin for a couple of hours and says, I get it. I'm all in. And so it's taking people on a journey and meeting them where they are. And that's one of the hardest things, is I sound like a conspiratorial nut job to the average person. And so you need to find the people who are most curious, and you can get in pretty, like this friend of mine, this pastor is one of these guys who I can be pretty uncensored in how I approach it with him. We make a lot more progress much more quickly. Most people in my life, you know, I've got to start at the basics of, you know, hey, you're enslaved by the system. The productive value of your labor is being robbed from you every single day. And when those sort of basic principles begin to click, then it becomes a question of, oh, okay, so how long can this go on? Well, not forever. You know, Rome learned that, and every other empire throughout history learned that. And so that's the path that we're on. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know when the music stops, but what I do know is that when the music stops, I want to have the one incorruptible form of money that no one can print, no one can take from me, that I can use anytime, day or night, for the rest of my life. And that's Bitcoin.
And those people of value, you know, the people that provide value in your life, you want to help them understand this so that they can also be saved from that whenever that, you know, music stops, and that does happen, because eventually, you know, it will. But it's the idea of you telling people, do not be afraid. You know, it's like the Bitcoin way is, I will show you, I will help you, I'll guide you. You don't have to have fear over taking responsibility and being sovereign and escaping the clutches of manipulation and theft, you know? So it's really amazing that it's like a lending a helping hand, you know? And you're even doing things like that, like saying, I will pay for that to help you do it, you know, because I want this for you. It's a gift to you. You know, it's like, it's not something that you're like, I'm trying to make money off of everybody that's doing this. You're just trying to get more people to also have a good future, companies and institutions that you believe in. And it's because we know what's happening, and it's because we sound crazy to a lot of people. But that's also why it's important that, you know, you started this podcast that you have, you know, the Bitcoin Way, and how any new voice that joins the Bitcoin scene and shares their voice, talks to people, it's one of those things that I think, you know, I'm starting to think that the newer people that come into Bitcoin are like a bridge, so we don't all sound as crazy, because, you know, we're able to connect dots between worlds. You know, I think that there's becoming a time where it was a lot more technological coders and the people that were really, you know, really technical speaking, financial or tech people that were into Bitcoin early on. But then now more people are finding out about it and are able to relay these messages and able to create companies and able to work for, to bring these solutions to people and relay them to a wider audience. So,
folks like, you know, Natalie Brunell wrote her book. I haven't read it yet. We did a webinar with her a couple of weeks ago. On the webinar, I ordered two copies. I said, I'm going to have my wife read this. My wife, trust me fully, she's on board, because my conviction is so high, but she's never like dug into it. She's not listening to Bitcoin podcasts or reading the books. But I told Natalie, I said, I'm going to get two copies. We'll read it together. But I think having voices like that, where Natalie doesn't have a finance background, she doesn't have a technical background, but she's gone on this journey, she gets it, she's, you know, obviously a very talented journalist. And there are more people like that today than obviously there were 10 years ago. You know, I like to imagine if Bitcoin had come on my radar a decade ago, I would have, you know, been all in and I would have gotten it. The reality is it just wouldn't have happened. I certainly didn't have the libertarian leanings that I would have needed then that I do now. Technically, I think I might have said, this is interesting, but I don't understand the problem it solves exactly, because I didn't recognize the problem that we've been discussing this whole time. So there are so many more resources. And to your point too, you don't have to, I mean, there was a time when there weren't hardware wallets, right? And there was a time when you were just using sort of these very basic software wallets, and you maybe didn't realize that you had to back up, you know, that your keys. So that way, if your computer crashed or whatever, you know, a lot of people have lost Bitcoin over the years. Those problems are all surmountable today. And it's just a matter of people waking up, reading the right book, finding the right resource, and then recognizing not only do they have the technical ability, but they have the, we were just recording about this morning. They have like the God-given right to own their own wealth, to own the productive value of their labor. And I think most people just, they're so accustomed to a system that enslaves them or robs from them, depending on what we're specifically talking about, that they almost don't feel like they're worthy of this option. And so their mind just shuts off to the notion that maybe there's a better option out there. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are going to have to experience a lot of pain for them to get there. But in the meantime, I'm going to do what I can. If I've got a farmer, a local merchant, someone who I think is providing me real world value, then I want to, you know, reciprocate. And selfishly, I hope my farmer is so grateful for the ultimate decision to not only to accept Bitcoin, but also to hold Bitcoin, that I become, in their minds, hey, this is the guy who did that for us when, you know, in his hour of need, let's be there for him. He's going to be one of the first people that we reach out to see if he needs food. I think that's the idea of circular economies is so much bigger than us just passing Bitcoin around to one another. It's building these relationships. I don't want to have to trust my money to someone else, but I rely on trust in every facet of my life outside of Bitcoin, right? I trust the guys who I work with. I trust my family. I want to trust my local farmer. I want to trust the people who I engage with in commerce. Bitcoin just offers this opportunity to bring us back to this place of trust. The money can be trustless and everything else can be, because we've established relationships in our lives worthy of trust.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, that's exactly true. It's more than just the Bitcoin. It's about the whole connection and, you know, just saving people, and also just like the gratitude, you know, that's like that circular effect too. Just being like, thank you for teaching me about this. Thank you for telling me to save it. You know what I mean? We wish we would have had people early on just reach out to us more and teach us. So it's the more that you kind of, in a way where, hey, I want to pay you in this, that's a great way to do it. Because instead of saying, hey, I'm going to make you understand this today, you could just say, I want to pay you in this. Just can you please hold on to some of it, you know, or something. And it's a great thing. It's just the future that you want to see. It just allows you to, I don't know, just be so hopeful and feel like you're helping. You're actually not just watching the despair around the world, and you're not watching, you know, because before, like without Bitcoin, you know, it's pretty bleak, you know, thinking about inflation and how expensive life is getting. It's, you know, and all people think about is investing, and is it another investment? It's like, no, Bitcoin teaches you to save money again, because Bitcoin is money and it's incorruptible money, and it's money that actually grows over time instead of falling over time. So it's not an investment, and people don't realize all they know now is spend the cash or invest the cash in something that, you know,
understand. No, like most people think that the S&P 500 is their lifeline to future riches. By definition, 99% of people have never read any of the annual reports of any of the Fortune 500 company or the S&P 500 companies. So effectively what you're doing is you're entrusting the product of your labor, the money that you've earned, into a bunch of companies that you know nothing about, seven or eight of which are the ones really carrying the load. And there are many of them zombie companies. Many of them probably philosophically at odds with things that you believe. And the only reason you do that, the only reason that makes any sense, is because the value of your labor is being stolen from you in the form of inflation. You're enslaved to the system. Most people have never stopped to ask, why do I need to invest my money? And the only reason you have to invest your money is because you will be poor if you don't do something with if you don't move it into something more productive than dollars. You're going to be very, very poor in the future. The fact that the stock market, I mean, I think the stock market would exist regardless, because I think that there are professional investors who are going to go do the research. They're going to find companies that they find compelling, and they're going to, you know, put money into it in hopes of higher returns in the future. The average person who just, they have a pension, they have a 401k, they're just setting some aside. The only reason they're doing it has nothing to do with understanding of what they're putting money into. It's just, I know that I need this money to grow, or else I will not be able to afford to retire. I will not be able to afford to send my kids to college. I will not be able to afford almost anything. And so the beauty of Bitcoin is what you're doing is you're shedding yourself of that responsibility to have a second job or to outsource that second job to a financial advisor, and you're just saving. You're converting the thing that's depreciating into a thing that's appreciating, that no one can stop and no one can create more of, no one can print. It's really that simple. But again, it's so simple, but you have to break free of this mindset that the stock market and buying government debt, like all of those are somehow like a natural phenomenon. They're not. They're only required in a debt-based fiat system where the money is continuously devalued.
Yes, that's so true. And it's one of those things that people think that investing in these companies is just a follow the leader type thing. Like everyone else is doing it, so I'll just do it too. And the gains that you are making year over year in these Fortune 500 companies or in the Magnificent Seven or whatever your advisor advises you to save your money in or invest in, it's the gains that you're making are not keeping up with the amount of inflation that's pumping these markets, so all the money that's funneled into things like even the airline industry, I heard, is one of the worst run businesses, and they're constantly being rescued, to keep running. So it's like all that money that is adding to our national debt, because this money that is being handed out to keep the system propped up, to make the stock market look like it's growing year over year, is because of our $37 trillion part of it. It's like part of it is wars. Part of it is, corruption and theft. Part of it is, just feeding companies that should have failed, So a lot of the money that you think you're getting is actually in turn making life more expensive for you. So, it's just it's like you're trying to play a rigged game, and the people that are trading, it's like once you find Bitcoin, you could just save money again. You realize that trading, even if you think I'm going to be a day trader or something, it's such a waste of time. Like you could be doing things with your life. You could be enjoying your kids. You don't have to be stressed out worrying about shorts and all. I don't know. It's a simple life. Just save your money in Bitcoin.
It's a simple life. I think that's well said.
Yeah. So I don't know. I love that. And I think that that's, it's like not something that that's exactly why when we think about treasury companies and why your company, the Bitcoin Way, is not, even if people ask you about it, you're not interested to talk about it. You're not, it's not something you care about. It's not actual Bitcoin. I've always been, if you want to get into this topic about Michael Saylor, I have like mixed feelings, because I like Michael Saylor because I learned a lot from him about what Bitcoin is. He definitely had a really great way of explaining Bitcoin, and I appreciate all the knowledge I've gained from listening to him speak over the years. I feel like me and him got into Bitcoin at the same time. It was like when I was learning from him at the same time. So I have this deep appreciation for Michael Saylor. And then when I first found out about the treasury company, MicroStrategy, I was very, excited for him because I thought he was just such a smart person. So I initially just bought a small amount of that just for the heck of it, just to support, but I haven't bought any more since. It was just because I was supported Michael and what he was doing for, helping people educate people on Bitcoin. But then, I heard recently something about him saying that sometimes they would, I don't know if this is true, but they would sell the Bitcoin, and I feel like for the amount of money that MicroStrategy has been buying, and then like as far as how much Bitcoin they've been buying, and always saying that never sell your Bitcoin, but it just makes me wonder how much of that market is manipulated and how much paper Bitcoin, they're buying the Bitcoin. It just seems like so much financial engineering that it feels like another fiat game that's being played. And I just feel like I think Michael, to me, it sort of feels like he's changed, I don't know. I think he's just more about making more fiat, and I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that the treasury companies are a fiat game. I think that lately they've been struggling immensely. I don't like to claim victory that, well, look, I was right about the treasury companies, because, 5 years from now I could be, eating my words. However, I have no interest in giving anyone my money, my fiat, so they can go buy Bitcoin. That I want more Bitcoin tomorrow than I had today. and I want in self-custody where I can control it. And the fact that I might yield a larger fiat denominated return versus what, like, I'm not looking at Bitcoin for fiat denominated returns. It will appreciate in fiat denominated terms because it will go up in purchasing power and the dollar will continue to be devalued. Every fiat currency will be devalued. But that's like, if Bitcoin's price in fiat terms never moved, I still have ungovernable, uncensorable money that no one can stop. And that's a victory for me. And so the idea of giving someone else my cash so they can buy Bitcoin, that, by the way, they, many of them, including Michael Saylor, won't show proof of reserves.
That's what I was going to say too.
Like, what am I gaining? So Bitcoin does 50. Okay. Like, let's play the fiat game for a moment. Bitcoin does 50%, you know, annually for the next 5 years, and, you know, Strategy does 60%. Okay. So you earn more fiat, like, you know, good for, and got capital gains tax implications, or maybe other tax implications. It's all, you know, largely from what I can tell, just feeding the fiat system. Like, my whole message, like, here's the thing. I will never feel defeated because someone brags about out earning in fiat, you know, compared to me.
Right.
Yeah. I had a higher return than your Bitcoin. The yield on Bitcoin is freedom. Like, that's my thing. I have more.
Yeah. If you wanted to go sell your stock, you're right. You'd have like, what, 40% capital gains tax on that or something.
You'd have capital gains. You'd have, you know, everything's KYC. There's no privacy. And like, I just like, okay, maybe you win in the fiat game, but like, I'm not playing the fiat game. That's why I'm buying from a local farmer. That's why I'm homeschooling my kids. That's why I'm, you know, I'm doing all of these other things, is because I have no interest in any of that stuff anymore.
You don't have to trust anybody else to do it for you.
Yeah. Here's the thing, I guess you could say I'm risk averse. I'm a saver, not an investor generally. If I find a company, or yeah, I guess probably really only a company, not, there's no other asset that I would have any interest in, I don't think, because Bitcoin is the apex asset. Then yeah, okay, maybe I take some of my stack and I invest it in that company in order to accumulate more wealth, because I think that there is an upside to that. But it's not giving someone else my money who has, you know, they have a $500 million software business or whatever. Like, it's a pretty uninteresting company, if not for the Bitcoin accumulation strategy. The same way that most companies are pretty, like, what's Smarter Web in the UK? Like, it's like a website design company or something. I looked into this a while ago. Like, no one would have any interest in that business except for their accumulating Bitcoin. It's like, okay, that's not interesting to me. Like, if I have a friend who says, hey, Michael, I've got this great idea. I'm going to start this company. Here's what we're going to do. It's going to be revolutionary. I know this guy well. I trust his instincts. He's done it before. Like, whatever the criteria may be, I might say, you know what? I'm going to shift from pure saver in Bitcoin to partial investor. I'm going to, you know, I think that there's an upside return. The same way that you might start your own business, or the same way that you might, you know, do anything else to invest in your future. I don't think there's anything wrong with investing. I just wonder, if you buy MicroStrategy stock, if you buy, you know, any treasury company stock, what you have to realize is you've gone from saver to investor. It's no longer a Bitcoin play. You're playing a fiat game. You're hoping to accumulate more fiat. Like, I'm just disinterested, you know. It's I'm fine talking about it, but like, it's not where I'm going to allocate my time and energy.
Right. Yeah. And that's why the whole thing about, you know, not sharing proof of reserves is, you know, you buy MicroStrategy, you don't know what your Bitcoin per share, how much it's going up. You know, you don't know. I mean, I don't know any of that for the amount of MicroStrategy I have. I don't really care to check, you know, but I don't think that it's saying, oh, look how much Bitcoin per share you've gained. You know, like, it's not like something that's upfront with the people. So, and it's the only thing I think is, like, it benefits the treasury company because they're able to, you know, raise more cash to buy more Bitcoin for the company, you know, but at the same time, in one way, it could be a bridge to get people who are stuck in their 401ks, stuck in the fiat system, to have exposure to Bitcoin without them having to take a tax hit to go buy the Bitcoin themselves by selling all their, you know, retirement fund or something, you know, to go buy. So I think in one way, it kind of like is a is a bridge to bring people to get exposed to Bitcoin, but you never truly own Bitcoin. And if there's ever, let's say, a bank run on people wanting to actually go buy the Bitcoin, do they have enough Bitcoin to back it up? Will there be a big problem? And I don't know, Michael Saylor just went from making so much sense to me explaining Bitcoin to now all he talks about is
digital,
you know, capital, the convertible bonds and the whatever he's doing. And I feel like it reminds me of The Big Short, you know, when Margot Robbie has to explain the finance, you know, mental gymnastics in the bubble bath, because she's like, I'll explain it to you because it's boring, you know, because it sounds like it's meant to confuse you, because I don't know what it means. Like, I want to know what you're doing and what exactly it means. And I can't really wrap my head around it. And it just sounds like financial engineering, which is financial, you know, more games. You know, I don't want to play fiat games. I just want to know truth and simplicity. And Bitcoin is simple and it grows because it has the supply schedule and the scarcity, and it's beautiful. You know, it's like you don't need to complicate that. So I don't know. Everything just sounds too complicated to me when it comes to these things lately. And that's why I have, you know, as far as our communities, I'm part of the Bitcoin Army on X, but I also initially started a group called the Paranoid Bitcoin Anarchists. And that was the name of my first community. And it kind of reminds me of the first time I heard Saylor talk about self-custody when he was interviewed, asking about, I don't know if you remember that interview, but it was, they were asking him about self-custody and treasury companies. And he was talking about paranoid crypto anarchists. So I just, I named my group Paranoid Bitcoin Anarchists because I'm like, yeah, we are a bit paranoid and that's okay. You know, we're paranoid because we're not going to have to trust anybody. We're paranoid about people's incentives. You know, it's like, not that I don't appreciate Michael for what he did for me and for teaching so many people about Bitcoin, but I just feel like I have a weird paranoid feeling about it. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the Saylor worship needs to stop. I learned a lot from him too. I mean, he kind of went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, I guess a year, maybe two before. I'm still pretty new to Bitcoin. I mean, I'm coming up on 4 years. And so I appreciate that. Here's the thing. He understands Bitcoin and he is utilizing it to earn a lot more fiat for himself and also to let other people help him accumulate Bitcoin for his company. At the end of the day, regardless of his intentions, good, bad, I mean, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, first of all, it's a fiat game. I think we're feeding the fiat system generally when it comes to treasury companies. And it's just not something I want to do. I think if you're really interested, if you're like, hey, I for whatever reason, I simply can't buy spot Bitcoin. I can't take self-custody, whatever reason. I think there are very few excuses. Maybe at like the institutional level that becomes more complicated or something. But for the average person, okay, buy the ETFs. Like, you know, like it's a highly regulated entity that is accumulating Bitcoin when you buy shares of the ETFs. And it's a more pure version of paper Bitcoin, I guess you could say. I'm not recommending the ETFs. Like I don't care about the ETFs, right? Like I care about spot Bitcoin and self-custody. But yeah, to me, there's a lot of financial engineering. I am sure that Michael Saylor is going to be, he's already fabulously wealthy. He's going to be even more fabulously wealthy in the future. But I don't care to fund him, you know, like good for you, like go for it. And I agree with you. I think his talk track, his narrative around Bitcoin has changed. I sympathize that he works in a regulated environment with a lot of eyes on him. And I would probably be cautious about how I talked about Bitcoin. Maybe there are things he really wants to say, and he would sound a lot like us if we gave him a couple of drinks in a private setting and he could just talk. Maybe not, you know, maybe not. Maybe he, you know, he's sort of, you know, feels the way privately, the way he speaks publicly. But either way, it's just, you know, I'm not an investor in treasury companies, and I'm sure as hell not a speculator. So I'm just going to continue saving in Bitcoin. There will come a day, though, where, you know, Bitcoin's only going to earn you, you know, it's only going to increase in purchasing power by 3% a year. You know, because that's just like the growth of productivity of society. That could be many, many years from now. I think we're early. And so it's going to continue to be 20, 30, 50 plus percent compound annual growth rate in terms of purchasing power. When that day comes that you're only earning, you know, you're only gaining 3% purchasing power. Okay. Like maybe it makes sense to find productive companies that you want to invest in because you want to grow your wealth by 20%. Maybe it's time to start your own business. Maybe it's time to, you know, do other things to, you know, put your wealth to work, so to speak. In the meantime, you know, if you think 50% is kind of the purchasing power increase of Bitcoin year over year, that's a pretty hard hurdle rate to beat. And to do that, you have to take on a lot of risk. You have to hope that the US government doesn't confiscate all of the Bitcoin from Coinbase. You have to hope that Bitcoin or that Coinbase doesn't get hacked, that we don't have a 6102 attack, that Saylor doesn't get hit by a bus and the investors lose all faith in their strategy, you know, pun intended, their Bitcoin strategy. There are so many layers of counterparty risk when it comes to any of these other things. Even the ETFs, you know, that BlackRock's not going to, you know, say, hey, we're going to fork Bitcoin and we're going to, you know, change the code. And the millions of people who are reliant on BlackRock for their Bitcoin exposure now say, well, I guess, you know, we're using Bcash version 2 because that's what BlackRock says and that's what their node is running. And so now there's 42 million coins, not 21 million or whatever. There's so many scenarios and you can write those off as improbable. And some of them probably are, but not all of them are. And when you add them up in aggregate, it's a hell of a lot of risk to take on. Just not worth it. Just buy Bitcoin, take self-custody. We can train you. Great resources online too, if you think you can do it yourself. But if you're unsure, I mean, hire an expert who can just walk you through it step by step. And use Stacy's link.
Yes, use my link. I will definitely post it in the, it'll be in the comments and it'll be in the description of the video. So yes, it helps, you know, support my channel, but it also helps support yourselves. You know, it helps support you guys so that you can make sure you are confident, you know, confident in your sovereignty and relying only on yourself. You don't have to trust other people. You know, you don't have to trust their incentives. It feels really good, a weight lifted off of you to know that you have it done right and you don't have to do it alone. But yeah, these incentives and these companies, and it's just kind of like, you know, it's just, it's becomes such a headache. And I mean, nobody knows where this is all going to lead, but we all know where Bitcoin's going. We all know what Bitcoin's doing. So you don't have to worry about, you know, and you're right. I think like when it comes to even thinking about Saylor, like he has probably so much pressure and so many eyes on him. And, you know, one thing I always liked about him, and I don't know if he'll ever see a clip of this or whatever, but he, and I'm okay with saying whatever I want to think, because it's like, you know, this is just how people view it, but he was always so calm and I felt like he was very humble, you know, and I liked that about him because he didn't seem like he was ever bragging. He was just truthful and honest. And that's what he was, you know, just transparent, you know. But as time goes on, it just feels like maybe he is having to play defense a lot. Maybe a lot of people have been attacking him. So maybe that's why he's more on edge, you know, with that recent interview that happened with, who was it? With
Danny.
With what Bitcoin did. But he was very, very on edge, you know, and that was not, you know, not like him, but he's done so many interviews. So it's like one time that he just, you know, but the character, you know, I think when you look at people's character, like, are they changing, you know, it's like, and that's why people in the Bitcoin space, you know, I know that you're trying to appeal to mainstream finance to have a gateway into Bitcoin or whatever his idea is, but it's like people, he's just changed a little bit, you know what I mean? And I feel like, I don't know, I like the old Michael, I guess, like his,
yeah,
whatever. But we'll see. Maybe this was just a one-time interview thing, and I hope it was like just he didn't have a great, maybe he was being attacked that week or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all have, you know, our own private battles that we're fighting, and, you know, maybe it was just a bad day, woke up on the wrong side of the bed. But yeah, I agree. Yeah. You know, he's become a bit more combative, a bit more defensive in certain ways. And to be fair, you know, we all sort of evolve in sort of how we approach things. I mean, I've been on, you know, 10 podcasts now, and probably the first couple I was, you know, much more, I was maybe a bit less demonstrative, and I would, you know, caution how I said things. And now I'm to the point where, you know, I think that I think people need to, they need to buy Bitcoin, they need to self-custody, and then they need to evaluate their lives and say, what are the other high time preference behaviors that I'm engaged in? How do I begin to fix that? And to be fair, I'm saying I think people should do that. I think they would benefit from doing that. My life is more peaceful now than it was a few years ago. And I'm eating healthier and I'm raising my family in a way that I think really aligns with like the deepest values that I hold that I probably didn't fully appreciate, you know, 4 years ago. Life is only as complicated as it is at times because we live in a world where you are enslaved by a system. And if you just go back to the basics and you step away from that, I think you position yourself very well to just live simply. I just, you know, I buy Bitcoin. I get my, you know, my meat and my produce locally from a guy who I know and I've shaken hands with. I get to teach my kids the way I want to teach them and not outsource that work to, you know, a public school teacher who's just reading off of a curriculum. And, you know, you start to, these things add up and I'm constantly looking for new small ways. Like I've moved from, you know, getting my coffee from my Nespresso to just doing pour over because I know I can get higher quality coffee. You know, I can pay for someone in Bitcoin to get my coffee. I can grind the beans myself. Like, it, you know, it's like, it's really like the little things, but when you live this way every day and you continually find ways to opt out, everything about your life just gets better. Everything about your life gets simpler.
I love that. And I love even you bringing up the idea of, you know, homeschooling and just the incentives of schools. And, you know, that's why I think opting out is one thing that, you know, I have a dream of working full-time in Bitcoin, like how you're working full-time for the Bitcoin way. And, you know, I still have my regular job and my husband is an educator. He's a teacher for a public school. And he's a great teacher, you know, but he has seen over the years the way that, you know, your hands are tied either with funding or with, you know, what you can do with this, with the students or how, you know, just how the administration deals with the teachers. There's just so many things that don't feel right when you're a teacher. And then you feel like there's so much wasted time as well. You know, just like when you're homeschooling, you can focus on the things that matter. You know, I've heard so many stories about kids that they're homeschooled and they do a portion of the work and they're just doing better than the kids in the public schools. So the public schools, like, you know, he even says it himself. He's like, the parents have to work. They have to put their kids somewhere while they're at work, you know? So he knows that's how it is, you know, and it stinks because it's like, you're, you know, he's a PE teacher, but he's in the gym and, you know, it's a long day and it's a lot of noise and it breaks you down over the years. Like, he loves what he does, but it's like 8 hours a day, you know, and you're just trying to fill time some of the time. Like, you know, how much can you make these kids run around in circles, you know, and, you know, he teaches them about health, which is something that, you know, even that school doesn't give any direction. He does his own, you know, lessons on health. You know, they have zero clarity on what they want to teach these kids. It's crazy. So what I love about what he's opting out with is he's always thought about, like, he's at the point of his life teaching for about 20 years that he's like, I'm kind of done with the public school stuff, but he's helping me now with my channel with doing those. He had the idea of people having short attention spans. So let's teach Bitcoin in short little spurts, you know, for different ideas in Bitcoin just quickly. And I love what he's doing to put his educational experience into teaching about Bitcoin. And it makes me happy to see that he wants to do that. And hopefully one day, you know, he can get out of the grind and get out of the public school, you know, hamster wheel that he feels like he's stuck on. Cause it gets tiresome. You know, you put your time in and then you just want to live the life you choose and be free of some of the, you know, the stuff that you don't see that's the way you want to live your life, you know?
Well, I guess maybe here's the optimist in me looks at that situation though. And because my belief is that there are tons of public school teachers who are just asleep at the wheel and they have no idea that they're just regurgitating like lies and misinformation and stuff. Like it's what they've been taught. We need people like your husband who understand a lot of things that most public school teachers probably aren't. It's not that there's no malintent, you know, right? By most of them. It's just, they're just kind of dealt this hand and then they have to play it, that there are students going through his class who are getting a taste of what he knows, even if it's just in little ways. And maybe it makes them more curious. Maybe they hear something that he says that's kind of different, but they like him and they respect him. And so why does he say this and everyone else is saying this, you know? And like, it's good to know that there are those public school teachers out there who are probably, there are a lot of public school teachers who are great teachers. They're having an impact beyond what they even realize. His impact is probably even at a broader scale, because not only is he, I imagine, you know, taking his work very seriously, but he's also learned a lot of things that are going to matter for these kids 20 years from now. So I understand, I can't imagine the grind he feels, you know, he's going through. But in the meantime, I'm hopeful that he's just a light, you know, in sort of this dark fiat world for some of these kids to, you know, to get a glimpse that maybe things aren't all as they seem, and maybe I should ask questions, and maybe I should dig a little bit deeper. And if that's the legacy he leaves in public schools, I mean, hats off to him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I like that. I think that's definitely true, because kids do remember that one teacher, you know, in the school that showed them something nobody else did. But that's the one thing I like about him. He's respected because he's honest, you know, with the kids. He holds them accountable, which a lot of people don't these days. A lot of people, you know, just don't want to, you know, like you said, they're asleep at the wheel. You know, they let the kids just do whatever because they're just, I don't care. I don't have the energy to deal with it. And he does the work. He'll actually take the time and he'll actually, you know, I don't want to say not the word punish, but like if somebody's out of line, he'll call them out, or he'll, you know, he'll do the stuff that nobody wants to do. They just let things slide too much. And he just kind of like, but they respect him for it. And he has his class in order and the kids listen, and it's hard to do. You know, he has to be on top of them, but they respect him because they know that he knows how to lead a class. You know, he can get these kids to listen, but also he's like a calm, you know, presence in a way, you know, but he's also a fun teacher and all these different things. So I love that he is, you know, there's a lot of kids that come back and he leaves a good impression on them, and they liked having him as a teacher or a health teacher. He's not strict in certain ways. He's, you know, but it's something that I'm just glad that there are people like him, you know. And but it does make us think sometimes, you know, if I didn't have to work in my own fiat job, you know, our kids could be, you know, homeschooled. You know, that's the problem. It's like you're trying to get, you know, to get by in this world, and maybe homeschooling. Like, I've talked to so many people, like probably your kids too. You're seeing the differences. You could do just maybe a quarter of the work, maybe less, I don't know, and of the time spent in school, let's say, and they're surpassing the testing of kids that are in public school. So it'd be nice if more parents would be able to do this. And I think on a Bitcoin standard, more families could be able to in the future just, you know, of homeschooled kids or something, like maybe like a group of just smaller, you know, not, it doesn't have to be just, I don't know how all that stuff works, but it's just very interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's sort of the path we've gone. So my wife takes the, you know, most of the load when it comes to homeschooling, but she's got a really good community of some homeschool families and whose values align with ours, you know, and like I view them as, you know, with gratitude that she has people to do different activities with, you know, like the sort of academic portion tends to be at home just between her and my kids. And then there are sort of extracurriculars that happen beyond that, you know, music class, and they're doing, you know, nature walks and, you know, like just, I don't even know all the things that they do. I'm looking for, so sort of like you're looking forward to the day where, and maybe it's, we're one cycle away from this or something, where you have that financial freedom to do the things you want to do. I think about that too, because I've gone on a path that my wife hasn't fully gone. I mean, she has to hear from me, you know, more than she probably likes, but I want to engage with my kids when it comes to history and, you know, a lot of economics and things that, you know, she would probably touch on to some degree in a curriculum. But like, she was asking me, she's like, hey, you know, it's MLK Day. What do we think about MLK now? Because like, you know, the mainstream narrative is, well, MLK was this, you know, great savior and everything. I told her, I was like, look, I haven't dug into the life of MLK. I think he had, you know, some shady, you know, immoral portions of him that I think seem pretty well demonstrated. I think he was generally standing up for what appears to be, you know, a good cause. And I told her, I said, I think what I want our kids to understand is that there aren't a lot of good guys and there aren't a lot of bad guys in history. There are just people operating and acting based on the incentives and the circumstances of their time. If you go back to almost anyone, and the example I've been using lately, because it's sort of the rabbit hole I've gone down, is our founding fathers. They fought for freedom. They put their lives on the line. Admirable men fighting for something that I believe was a just cause. And then they got power. And George Washington is, you know, leading a attack against people who revolted over taxes. John Adams is violating First Amendment rights of people. He's censoring free speech under his administration. Thomas Jefferson's buying, you know, purchasing, making the Louisiana Purchase, which was not outlined as a constitutional right attributed to the federal government. And like you go on down the line, and it's like, so was George Washington a good man? He was just a man. He played a role. He did some things good. He completely went off the rails in certain areas, at least by my view. And the same is true of every president since. It's Abe Lincoln. I mean, I could go on a rant about him right now. I think
every president is a man. Everyone has faults. Everyone has greed.
Exactly. Exactly. I told my wife, I said, you know, if I ever became president, you should be distrustful of what I'm saying publicly, what I actually am trying to accomplish, because we say, you know, you hear this trope that, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And whether absolute power corrupts absolutely, I don't know. Whether people with good intentions get into power and then do very bad things, that is, I mean, just look at history. It is littered with examples of that very phenomenon. And so I guess if we can go back to my point in all of this is, as we teach our kids, and as I talk with other adults about what I'm learning, everyone wants a good guy. Everyone wants a bad guy. Everyone wants black and white. Should I listen to Fox? Should I listen to CNN? Is the Wall Street Journal better? Or is the New York Times better? It's like, no. First of all, they're all owned by BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street. So like, there's that. But like, okay, if we don't want to put on our tinfoil hat, these are just journalists operating under some set of incentives that we can't fully know, but we can speculate on if we follow the money, which is rather simple to do. And the way I think of it is every voice, whether it's, you know, Bill Maher or Candace Owens or Tucker Carlson, they're a node on my network of information. And I've got books, podcasts, all sorts of resources that I can access like that, that can corroborate what they say or can completely contradict what they say. And so I don't look to any one person as like, this is my source of truth. This is my guy. This is who I pay attention to. Whatever they say goes. It's like, maybe they're right. But like, this is the whole don't trust, verify mantra. You know, I've already started to teach my 7 and 5-year-old this. Just because someone says it doesn't mean it's true. And you got to sort of begin slaying your heroes, whether it's Michael Saylor, or whether it's, you know, the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or anyone else. Like they're everyone has their own interests. And that's the reality.
I love this turn that you took, because it's like when you want to make a change in the world, if everyone starts to make change in their own life and takes their own responsibility, and you know, your truth doesn't have to be the world, like all the news, everything you hear in the whole world all around you. If everyone just starts to focus on their own money, you know, real money, Bitcoin, you know, truth, and then, you know, supporting local farmers, eating real food, getting healthy, you know what I mean? Like saving more of their time in Bitcoin so that they can get healthy in the future. They don't have to work, you know, 60 hours a week or something. It's like all these things can contribute to more of a free life where you can focus on your own your connections around you, your community, you know, just that's reality. You know what I mean? It's like everything else is just kind of manipulation through media. It doesn't mean the whole world's news isn't reality. It just means that how you're shown it is so manipulated and so polarizing. So it creates all these problems in the world. So if everyone were to focus more on their own, like individual bubbles and how it touches these other bubbles and just, you know, it just, you can heal, if everyone can heal, if they all just start to focus, you know, and just on themselves and their communities and just, I don't know. I just feel like that's just a really nice thought.
Yeah. I have a base case about most world events, and I have my biases, and I kind of throw my hands up most of the time and say, I don't know. I probably won't ever know. What I do know is that I'm going to save in Bitcoin for these reasons. I do know that I'm going to continue best I can to support, you know, my local church, my local farmer, my friends and family. I'm going to homeschool my kids, educate them the best I can, make them think critically, not just listen to what mom or dad says about any particular topic. But I'm, help them to understand that whatever the mainstream narrative is that they're teaching in public schools probably has some merit in some cases. And probably there are a lot of lies thrown in there. And there's another side to the story. Well, let's go find a documentary. Let's go find a book. Let's go read about that. And then you've got access to all of the world's information at your fingertips. Go do some research, figure it out. If you care enough, like come to an informed conclusion. Most things, though, don't require a conclusion. Like, I have my opinions about World War II. I have my opinions about the Civil War. I don't know how much it matters if I'm right, though, you know?
And even if you're right, even if you think you're right, like the history was written by the winners, right? So it's like, yeah. We don't know when they say there's two sides to every story, you know, you're knowing what was printed in whatever history, you know, has been, you know, documented through time, but you don't know if it's truth. Nobody has a way of knowing who wrote that. You know, it's very hard to trust any side, you know, that's why there's so many conspiracy theories and so many different things. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. So for people, I'm weary of people who think they know everything. But when it comes to Bitcoin, it's so different because like when people are so convicted in Bitcoin, but you think you're weary of people who know, they're so confident about something they can't possibly know about. But Bitcoin is something that you can be confident about. And you can actually say it works like this and it can't be changed because of this. It's actually something you can say knowing that it is truth. It's not like you're talking about history and not for sure knowing.
Right. Yeah. You can look at the code. You can evaluate the cryptography. You can, you know, learn some math, and which I have to trust and not verify when it comes to some of that. But it's open source and it's readily available for anyone to make their own determination. And you're right. When it comes to history, I mean, history is largely written by the victors. And now the good thing is there are people who will go dig deep and they will find, you know, the alternative, you know, stories about almost any piece of history, any war, anything. And I guess my whole point is what I have learned in the last 4 years is that I was pretty much wrong about almost everything that I believed. Not everything, but almost everything. And what I have to be is open-minded to the conclusions I've come to today might be disproven by myself and my own research in another 4 years. And I'm okay with that. I mean, that's sort of the human condition. And the only question is, are you going to be curious enough to keep asking and to keep digging and to keep seeking out truth? Or are you just going to accept what all of the mainstream outlets say, what your financial advisor says? What are you just going to trust the experts with everything? It's not to say that experts, so-called experts, shouldn't weigh in and you shouldn't acknowledge that maybe they know something, but to assume that the experts who are all indoctrinated in the same fiat school system have come to the right conclusion about everything, like that seems pretty stupid to me too. So it's just a matter of asking. And the only, here's the thing, like I'll read a book about, you know, like I don't mean to keep like going back to the same topics. I've kind of gone down the Civil War rabbit hole recently. So like I've learned a lot about that. It doesn't really matter though, what happened during the Civil War. I mean, there are implications to how we view the world today. What matters a lot though is like, okay, what are mainstream doctors saying about how we should eat? Like that matters in my life. So I should probably do some research and try to figure out, should I be a vegan? Like, I don't think so, but I have pretty good reasons for why I think veganism is a bad idea. I'm going to dig into that because it affects my meal 3 times a day. Like those are the things that matter. You have to get that stuff right, even if your conclusion about what happened, you know, in the Civil War, is, you know, right, wrong, or whatever. It doesn't impact your daily life. It might impact how you teach your kids to think, but it doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. It really matters if you can preserve your purchasing power into the future. It really matters if you're training your body to be healthier, if you're teaching your kids to think independently and critically. Like those things matter. So I think people tend to focus on, like I get videos from friends like, hey, here's what Candace Owens is saying. Hey, here's I'm like, whatever she's saying, it doesn't impact my life. Like, you know, I don't care. Like maybe she's right. Maybe she's wrong. Maybe she's bought and paid for. Maybe she's awesome and she's going to be a martyr soon. Like, I don't know, but
I just enjoy the memes. I think it's fun to sort of, if someone sends me something and I see it, I'm like, oh, that's funny, you know, but I think that, you know, it's once you get away from all that, it's such a noise, like it's a lot more calm, a lot less stressful. You know, you feel like you have more time to do the things that matter in your life because you're not focusing on all these things that that kind of just spread you thin. You know what I mean? You come back to yourself and what's important, and you feel better. You feel, and that's better for your health too, you know? So their stress levels lower, you know? So yeah, not focusing on everything that can, I think people like being triggered a lot, you know, they like to, and it's just kind of like start to, when you realize how much manipulation there is, and Bitcoin kind of leads you to a lot of that. It's nice that once you find truth in something and how money leads to so many problems, so you just find all these rabbit holes, and it's you're grateful for it. You know, you're grateful to be able to escape a lot of that.
Yeah. Time is finite, and there's no reward at the end of your life for being right about everything. There is, however, a reward in the legacy that you leave, and seeing that you've enabled your kids a better life, and or left the world a better place, or you've had some impact on humanity for the better. And those are the things I want to focus on. And that means taking care of myself, means taking care of my family. It means preserving the wealth that I generate through the work that I do. And, you know, I'll adjust as time goes on, I'm sure, some of the things that I do. That's all I've been doing for the last 4 years. But in general, I think, you know, those are the questions you need to ask. Like, what are the things that impact the legacy that I leave? How do my kids remember me? How does my wife remember me? How do my friends and neighbors and the people who I interact with on a day-to-day basis remember me? And I can assure you, none of them are, for all the conclusions I think I've come to, none of them are going to look at my life and say, you know what? He nailed that thing about the Civil War. He was right. The rest of the world was wrong. No one's going to care. But my family's going to care a hell of a lot how I show up every day and what I taught them and what, you know, financially, what I'm able to pass down to them. And if you just like step back and evaluate, you know, your life in those terms for a couple of minutes, it's going to change a lot of the things that you focus on. And it's not going to be what the algorithm is feeding you.
Values and principles.
Yes.
No, that's what it is. And you are leaving a legacy by doing what you're doing, creating, you know, the podcast, also speaking at conferences, you know, just it's being able to, when you have even hesitation or fear about things, but knowing how it's important to reach out there and get your voice out there and reach new people to show them the way. It's important to push past even fears or reservations that you have about trying new things to actually, you know, keep the conversation going, be real, you know, share, like you were afraid to say certain things early on. Now you're just, you know, you realize that authenticity is, you know, the legacy you also want to leave behind. Bitcoin is authentic. You're authentic. You say what you feel. You're, you know, not swayed by, you know, money, fiat, you know, different things. But it's just something that, you know, it's important to speak. It's important for people to talk about Bitcoin, you know, join podcasts, actually start podcasts and join conferences and speak about it. This is so early that, you know, even just thinking about this from me starting a podcast last year in the early spring, I'm already going to be speaking at 3 conferences this year. And it's a scary idea, you know, but I'm super excited about it. I can't wait to be part of the conversation. That's how early we are in Bitcoin, where someone like me who started a podcast last year could be on a stage discussing why other people should start podcasts or build Bitcoin communities and those types of things. So I'm very excited, and I can't wait to see what other people do and, you know, how many more people you'll reach to. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me today. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, I think that it's what you're doing is important. And I think it aligns well with the things I'm talking. Like the reason I want to do the podcast, I want to take the opportunity to speak, even though like I don't like stages, I don't like microphones, I don't like large groups of people. And that's exactly what a conference is, you know, if I'm speaking there. It's one of those things that I know I won't regret taking those opportunities. The same way I won't regret playing with my kids and getting on the floor and wrestling with my son and participating in their education and, you know, supporting local businesses. I'll never regret those things. There are a lot of things in life, you know, staring at your phone, hanging out with the wrong people, shit coining, you know, all these other things that I think lead to regret. And so, you know, if you just wake up every day with that mindset, like, what are the things that I know I'm never going to regret? Like, do as much of that as you can in a given day. And, you know, leave the rest, you know, you can just hope that, you know, hope that the legacy that's built because of those decisions is one that you're proud of.
Yes, that's true. And When this is the last thing I'll ask you, I will, we will wrap this up after this last question, but I am curious, when you did speak at your first conference, how did you feel prior and how did you feel after?
Well, so my first actual conference I spoke at was at BTC Prague on the main stage in front of about 2,000 people. I'd spoken once or twice in front of, you know, 30 people, something like that. I was less nervous than I thought I would be because I'm just not like a public speaker. I'm fine with, you know, cameras and that. I've grown accustomed to it with the podcast. It's very different speaking in front of a large group. But I, you know, I had nerves and, but I think I felt like I knew what I need, what I was going to say was important. It was at least important to me. And I figured there would be people who it would resonate with. And afterwards, I'll be honest, I mostly felt relieved. You know, I could enjoy the rest of the conference and not have to, you know, think about going on stage again and preparing. This year, I'll be speaking at Prague again. God willing, and you're first to know, I've got a baby coming in July, a month after Prague. My wife's less excited for me to go to Prague before we have a baby coming, but I think it's an important thing for me to do, and I'll get back in time for the baby, I'm sure. And I think this time around, I'm going to enter with sort of the conviction, more obvious, that I have. I'll be less focused on saying the right thing, following the slides exactly, like all the mechanics of giving a speech, and more focused on just saying what I think needs to be said. And I think that's kind of the evolution that I've had as I've gone on podcasts more and more. Like, you're getting the most blunt version of me, you know, compared to someone, you know, 6 months ago who had me on. So I hope, you know, I hope people find it to be authentic and useful. Whether they agree with everything or not, I'm sure I'm wrong about something I've said here. So, you know, I'm open-minded, but I'm excited to hear you speak. I think we're going to be at one together in September.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to be speaking at the Midwest Bitcoin Summit.
Yes, yes, we will be there. I will be speaking there too. Yeah. That's amazing. Then we'll get to meet in person.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to that. So,
great. And when is Prague again?
Prague is June.
Okay.
Mid-June, maybe. Yeah, the 10th or 11th. I think so. It'll be,
yeah, that's awesome. So Ohio, Midwest Bitcoin Summit, we're both going to be speakers there. And then, Prague, congratulations on the baby.
Thank you.
You know, how long are you going to be in Prague for then?
I think with travel days, it ends up being about 5 days away. So I think the conference is maybe, yeah, three days. Like there's maybe like an industry day and then two, something like that.
You got to give yourself a little time for the jet lag so you're not, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So I got to get in early. It's hard traveling, you know, to Europe because you're jumping ahead, you know, 7 hours or whatever it is. And so by the time I get in, it'll be like the conference starts the next day, the next morning, and kind of got to get ready to go. But it's always a good time. Fun to hang out with the team because I don't get to be in person with them that often.
That's great. Yeah, just being able to be in person is such a different thing.
Yeah.
And you are, I mean, it's just crazy to think how experience, you know, doing things more, having a podcast, you're feeling different about it this time around. You're feeling more confident. You're going to just, you know, be your more authentic self, not be so afraid. So that is what happens. You know, the more you speak, you know, even starting a podcast, like you said, 6 months ago to where you are now, it's just so much more natural. And then you look forward to more of these speaking engagements. So, but again, thank you so much for joining me. I know that I could talk to you all day. We could do this again because we haven't covered probably half the topics I thought I was going to ask you about today. But,
well, but we I'm can looking do forward.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting you in Ohio for the Midwest Bitcoin Summit. And just, I think that'll be, I'll have a little bit of practice by then. So hopefully my speaking skills get a little more confident by that point. So, are you going to be in Vegas as well?
Or, I'm sorry, I'll be in Vegas. So if you're going to be there, we can meet up.
Okay, great. Yes, I'll be in Vegas too. Yeah, so, and also the last one, BitBlock Boom, I'll be doing that one as well.
When is that? I don't have plans at the moment to be there.
That one is at the beginning of April.
Beginning of April? Okay, I'll look into it. I've heard it's a good one. I haven't been before.
Yeah, it'll be my first time there too. So, but I'll be doing that one with, I think my husband and I are going to be doing a community, you know, kind of panel or something.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's so nice. Thank you so much for joining me today. Check out the Bitcoin Way. Check out subscribe to the newsletter, take the survey and use my code and get in contact with them so you can, you know, secure your Bitcoin. Make sure it's safe.
Thank you, Stacey. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Take care.